third, 2025 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everybody for participating and remind everybody to silence your phones, please, or electronic devices. Today's meeting is a study and business session. There will be an executive session following our business session scheduled. We welcome the public's input and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to provide comments and ask specific questions after each agenda item presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, we'll provide time for that. If you would to address any item on the agenda, wait until the presentation has been completed. Raise your hand, signaling that you would like to speak to address us. When recognized, please come to the microphone up at the center and state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have five commissioners present: Kirk Hudson, General Manager; General Counsel Eric Wahlquist; and Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board. At this time, would you please join Caden Stockwell, Technology Program Manager, for the Pledge of Allegiance and the Safety, Human, and Operational Minute.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome, Caden, and why don't you start off and tell us a little bit about yourself. Go ahead and have a seat.
All right.
And tell us a little bit about your role here at the PUD.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Caden Stockwell.
You have to speak close to the microphone.
I am a technology programs manager for IT. I've been with the district for coming up on my three years this year. I have two kids, one's a three-year-old and one's a one-year-old. And I have an incredibly supportive wife who's actually here today in the back, here to listen to me give my presentation on human and organizational performance.
Very good. And welcome to your wife.
All right. So today we're going to dive into human and organizational performance. And I want to take a moment to talk about this and how it applies to one of our most critical customer-facing applications that we support in IT. It's the public outage portal. Briefly, to guide us through these moments, Chelan PUD has adopted six key HNLP principles. They are: people have dignity, air is normal, blame fixes nothing, context drives behavior, learning is deliberate and vital, and our response matters. So as Todd Conklin puts it, you can either learn and improve or blame and punish. You just can't do both. So let that sink in for a second. Just a brief intro to the public outage portal for those that aren't familiar with it. It is not a tool for directly restoring outages. We have our amazing crew that does that. But this is a 24/7 customer-facing application that is there to help our customer make informed decision during an electric outages. However, just like any system, it's not immune to errors. When things don't go as planned, how we respond, learn, and improve makes all the difference. So today, I want to talk to you about how we in IT use HNLP principle to build and retain trust in our customer. So the example here is recently we had an outage in the Lake Wenatchee Plain area that did not display on the outage portal. As you can see here on the bottom right, normally you would see in the area affected on the map, but because it wasn't showing there was an issue, as you can see here on the left, that's what the public outage portal is. And because this happened during the weekend with reduced capacity after hours, our duty supervisor communicated to our system operation to let them know, hey, there's an issue. And then they manually triggered a downtime notification message, which you can see on the top left here. And then after that, they notified the IT teams, and they requested to respond either immediately or follow up the next morning depending on the impact of the outage to our customers. So how our team resolved this was that we performed a root cause analysis to understand what went wrong, and then we identified corrective actions by implementing long-term fixes to improve future reliability, and then we planned and executed changes to prevent similar issues from happening in the future, and then lastly, we conducted a retrospective to ensure continuous improvement. So diving into the H&OP principles, the first couple, people have dignity and air is normal. We know that system can and will fail, and we must be prepared to address these failures. Rather than we focus on the solution over the blame, and then we also recognize that our customer comes first, and we need to provide them timely information while at the same time respecting our staff's well-being, especially on the weekend. Next one is blame fixes nothing. So instead of pointing fingers at someone, we focus on the why. Why did the outage happen? And why did the system fail? And we collaborated across our teams to resolve the issue. Next one is context drives behaviors. With reduced after-hour support, our team made the best decision at the time with the information that we were given. Acknowledging the issue first and then working towards a solution second. And oftentimes our customer, just knowing that there is an issue, is enough for us to maintain and build trust with our customer while allowing us enough time to do that permanent fix rather than just applying a band-aid to the issue. So operational context influence the team's action is the takeaway from this. This aligns, the real takeaway here is really it wasn't about fixing an outage portal display issue. It was about continuous improvement and making our system more resilient. So what we did to prevent future incident was we leaned on each other's expertise and collaborated. We had enhanced system checks to catch issues faster. We expanded notifications to alert the right teams earlier, and then we did knowledge transfer to ensure more staff can address this issue and challenges in the future. So this aligns with the last two key H&OP principles. Learning is deliberate and vital. And then the last one being our response matters. Our team's quick action ensured our customer maintained confidence in the portal. And then rather than focusing on the blame, we focus on the solution to improve long-term outage response strategy. So, what can we take away from all of this? The first one is when systems don't operate as designed, we focus on learning and not blame. Collaboration is key. Teamwork drives success. Teamwork makes dreams work. Our response shapes outcome and builds our customer trust. And then lastly, we always strive for continuous improvement to better serve our customer. My call to action to you is, whether you're at home or at work, take a moment to slow down, be intentional, and focus on your current processes. Are they designed to catch and mitigate errors effectively? Next one's collaborating. Talk to your partner, talk to your team, and have honest and open conversation about issues and processes that you may be having to strengthen those responses and share lessons learned. And then lastly, lead. As a leader, we want to model problem-solving mindset and drive systemic improvement. So, because this is what H&OP is all about.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Hang on just a second. Randy, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I guess I do. You know, thank you for that, Caden. And I want to share with Karnan, the last name may sound familiar because it is. Caden is Doug Stockwell's son. We both knew Doug in our other lives as fruit growers, and so it's really great to know that you're here and that you're. This is a great message for everybody in the room. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, my dad's one a big grower in the valley. So, yeah.
Caden, I think you challenged us with the call of action and. Something came to mind that I thought I would just bring up, that Board of Commissioners are going through a process of policy governance, of reviewing everything that we're doing, the delegations that we give to the manager, the way we respond to each other, how we operate. And this just made a connection to me that it's a systems thinking approach, that what we put down in our policies, we want to helps guide and it helps lead and it helps give direction to the organization. Collaboration is key. Teamwork does drive success, and it drives towards that continuous improvement that we're looking for in our organization. It does provide safety in the organization that people are not operating under fear, but they're operating under a set of principles and guidance, and that if something is going wrong, then we need to fix those principles and that guidance and those policies so that we're continually improving. And I wanted to take just a minute, commissioners, if you didn't mind, I guess that's what you get to do as board chair, is that you do get to stop and reflect every once in a while that I think for the first time I've made a connection in what I do as a board, as a commissioner, on human and organizational performance to help improve that. And this made a great connection for me today. And I just thought I would bring that aha moment that I had to my fellow commissioners and to the audience, that we all have a role to play in our efforts of human and organizational performance. We all play a role in that. So, Caden, thanks for kind of challenging me with your call to action, and that meant a lot to me. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Caden.
All right, commissioners, management is not making any requests to move or recommendations to move any other resolutions to the consent agenda. Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon any request of any commissioner. Do I hear any such requests or additions to the agenda? All right, agenda stands. So let's move on to item number three, Kirk.
Okay, agenda item number three is the fourth quarter district performance plan results. And we have a number of employees sitting in for their respective supervisors. We have Lindsay in for John, Jeff DiGenova in for Ian, Cassie in for Jared, and Allison in for Rosario today. So what you'll hear is a report on the status of those items that change status from third quarter to fourth quarter only as exceptions. Take it away.
All right. Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, commissioners. Justin Erickson, Chief Strategist.
Can you pull that microphone a little closer?
Stakeholder officer. Good to be with you. I have the pleasure of reporting on the first item, and it is the only item under objective number one, commit to the highest level of customer owner satisfaction. This item speaks to conducting the planning process that led to our 2075 vision. We had a goal of completing the initial draft by the end of quarter three, which would have been September 30th, and just with sequencing and scheduling, that happened a week later on October 7th. So that's why it's marked completed after deadline. But as you know, it is now completed. As I reported to you last meeting, we've got the final version posted on our website, copies made, and excited to share, continue to share the news out in the community about our visioning efforts.
Good morning, commissioners. Lindsay Mons. Item number one under objective two is our electric service reliability target. And we've been working hard for several years to improve the metric here, bring down the number of minutes our customers are out of service. Unfortunately, this year we had another high year, ending on an average of 104 minutes per customer. This is really driven by two different things. For one, we were hoping that our auto reclosers and the settings in the summer for our in our fire mitigation areas, that we would have SCADA controls on those and be able to adjust them real time with weather forecasts. But we continued this summer in a just a steady state where we set the controls for worst case, and then therefore they don't auto reclose, which is a fire safety protection, but it does leave our customers out of service a little longer. Going into 2025, we're looking forward to having more of those on those SCADA controlled devices. Also impacting this metric, particularly in quarter four, was the impact that we had of the bomb cyclone that mainly hit the West Coast, but it did have some impact here in our service area as well. Because we see that quarter four reliability numbers drop more significantly, we will continue to see that over the next year because this is a metric that we look back for 12 months. So each time we report in Q1, it would look back for 12 months from there. So those impacts of that November storm are going to continue to plague us into next year. But hopefully at this time, we would see a much improved score.
Good morning, Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. Objective 2, Item 2, Hydro Capability. We had a target year end of 76.2%. Unfortunately, we ended at 75.3%. And that was due to, in the second quarter, we had our exciter issues. Third quarter, we had our transformer issues at Rocky Reach. And then in fourth quarter, unfortunately, we weren't able to finish our C11 and B3 units. That 1% relates to about 20 megawatts.
Under Objective 3, talking again about some wildfire mitigation plans here, we were able to file the state-mandated wildfire mitigation plan by the deadline. So that one is complete.
Okay. Janet Aspers, Chief Energy Resource Officer. On Objective number 4, we had the SPP Marcus Plus Phase 2 funding go-no-go decision. And since last quarter, we have completed that. We had a resolution approved on November 18th to allow the general manager to enter into a service agreement.
Good morning, Commissioners. Jeff DeGenova, Director of IT Operations and Security, sitting in for Ian Fitzgerald. This update is on the goal of maturing our cybersecurity maturity model, or C2M2, in the architecture domain. That work was complete by our staff that work cross-functionally to identify the architecture and the controls and processes necessary to govern it moving forward.
That's 3A, Objective 5, 3A, is that
correct? That is correct.
Good morning, Commissioners. Cassie Bertelson, Program Manager for Human and Organizational Performance, filling in for Jared Watts. I am reporting on Objectives 6A and 6-2A, first being to develop a district-wide strategy to create purpose-driven safety programs. So we are marking that item as complete in 2024. Not only has that process been created, but we are going to use that as our lens for how we evolve and create our safety and health programs moving forward, so that work will begin in 2025. The second item for that is our human and organizational performance strategy to incorporate those H&OP building blocks across all facets of the organization. So we were able to create a 7-part, 14-hour training series that was beta tested and delivered to over 50 leaders across the organization. We'll be further rolling out that training series this year and then also crafting a version of that for our frontline employees as well.
All right. I'm Allison Brodeen, Total Rewards Manager, sitting in for Rosario Nystrom. She's out today. Continuing on in the same category, with goals focused on staff development, building resiliency, and advancing capability, we're pleased to announce that we have completed our first year of the Developing Leaders from Within program. with a 93% completion rate, exceeding the 75% goal. We're, as a learning organization, we conducted a debrief and feedback sessions with our participants to assess the program strengths and areas for improvement. And we found that the participants really, really highly valued the in-house training opportunities and really want to learn more about operations so that they can provide impactful, contributions as part of this training program. So based on this feedback, we are spending the year to update and enhance the program so that it really continues to deliver exceptional results, and we are looking forward to launching the next cohort in 2026. And then on the next goal, succession planning, we had a partnership project with Generation and Transmission, and I'll go ahead and speak on behalf of Brett, who is in the audience and can clarify anything that I may miss here. But we successfully completed this goal by collaborating with Generation and Transmission to develop succession plans for all of the key director level positions and also other hard-to-fill positions throughout the organizational unit. We've identified high potential employees as potential candidates for those roles, and leaders have been working with those individuals to align their development plans with the district's succession planning goals. This pilot program has really allowed us to put this framework into place, and we are pleased to say that we are moving forward assisting finance and accounting with their succession plan goals, so we're embarking into that process as well.
Before we move on, just that's an important issue for me. I love to hear that. So the succession planning and thinking about the future, and nice job on that. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so next item is Objective 7, Item 3B, decide on a strategic direction with sustainable internal rate structure to support all the district facilities with broadband services by 12-1. This item is complete. Team went through and had discussions and made agreements between multiple business units. That's paved the way for using fiber at all our campus sites with a standard rate structure and architecture, allowing access to IT and OT technology service to support reliability of the services the PUD provides.
Could I make a quick comment on something I just now noticed? And I don't know if you guys are responsible for it or not, but for the last two meetings, I'd walk in here with my iPad, I'd get hooked up to Wi-Fi, and I would have to shut it down because it wouldn't work. Today it worked. So I just want you to know that.
All right, that's good news.
All right, next item is Objective 7, 5B. Just select a finance and H&M cloud migration path and develop a work plan by 12-1. This item was not complete. A decision was made to move into a planning cycle for in 2025, and we have a committee that's been stood up and a project plan identified, and we'll be moving through that planning effort in 2025.
And that concludes the items on the district performance plan to update you on. A couple of things, just overall, 76.6% completion, which is good progress, an improvement over what we've been accustomed to around the 69% range. Still have room for improvement, for sure. I'd say what I'm particularly proud of is the strong finish in 2024. A number of the items you just heard about were on track, and then completed. And you might recall we have a pattern that we've been accustomed to. We're on track, and then don't finish it in the first fourth quarter, but strong finish in 2024.
Kirk, I had a question. Going back to the succession planning, and I think I heard that there was the pilot project term used there, and then moving into finance, and are we moving away from off the pilot project to this is something we're going to regularly do, or just a question there?
Yeah.
And I don't need an answer on that right now.
No, so, and Allison, if she's still here, you can correct me, but the plan was to develop that process in generation and transmission so that it could be used elsewhere in the organization, and finance has a number of positions that they're preparing for the future. So it is a framework that can be used elsewhere in the organization. Correct me if I said anything that was inaccurate.
No.
Thumbs up.
That's correct.
That's great.
So ready to go.
Thanks. Sorry, it took me a while to process that and ask the question later. All right, commissioners, any questions, comments? Great. Thank you for the update.
You betcha. Thank you all for reporting.
All right. Let's have, let's go into legislative update. Kelly?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great. Kelly Scott, Program Manager for Strategic Affairs, State Government. Policy, something, government affairs.
Whatever
I watch what's going on in Olympia,
it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so today we're just going to run through the session as it's unfolded so far over in Olympia and some of the issues that we're watching on behalf of the PUD. Okay. As you all know, this is the 105-day session. It began on January 13th. It's scheduled to adjourn on April 27th, which means we are just over 20% of the way through today. It's the first year of the legislative biennium, so that means it is a budget writing year, as you all know, and that means we are going to see new operating, capital, and transportation budgets. That task of writing budgets is made more difficult just because of the budget shortfall that the state is experiencing. They project about $10 to $12 billion shortfall over the next 4 years, but we'll see a updated revenue forecast pretty soon, I believe. Of course, the budget is not the only thing on lawmakers' agenda this year. The legislature is considering a large array of proposals to improve public safety, from subsidizing police officer employment to funding understaffed public defense systems, and we've seen bills again, just like last year, attempting to address the housing crisis in the state as well, allowing folks to split their lots to add cottages or accessory dwellings and things like that. So housing, public safety are among the top priorities we're seeing. You've seen these deadlines several times now, and the one that I'm really keeping my eye on at the moment is February 21st, when bills need to have passed out of the policy committee in their house of origin in order to stay alive. And after that, we think we're going to see a lot fewer bills being introduced, and we'll have some time to then dig in to the bills that have already been introduced, and the flow will stop being quite so intense at that point, which will be helpful. A lot of new faces in the energy world, a lot of new names that you'll be probably meeting with in the next few years and hearing quite a bit from. Of course, we have a new governor, Bob Ferguson, who comes to the office with his own agenda, and it seems quite different from his predecessor on energy in particular. He's focused on cutting unnecessary spending and increasing efficiencies and that sort of thing. Meanwhile, he's named former EPA Regional Administrator Casey Sixkiller to be the next head of our ecology department. He's named former State Senator Joe Wynn to head up the Commerce Department. And Joe Wynn, because he had been the chairman of our Senate Energy Committee, there's a new chairman there, chairwoman. Her name is Sharon Shoemake. She's from Bellingham. And our new chairwoman is also an associate professor at Western, where she teaches energy policy and environmental economics. So in some ways, she's very steeped in these issues. There's a new chair at the State's Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council, or EFSEC, Kurt Beckett, and he comes to that role after positions with Strategies 360, congressional delegation members, supports. So he's also very familiar with this world of energy policy. And finally, last week, Governor Ferguson appointed Brian Ryberick as the new chair of the UTC, the Utilities and Transportation Commission. And, of course, he's succeeding David Danner, who you all met with probably at WAPUTA meetings and things like that over the years, who just retired. I'll just note our own delegation here in the 12th and now the 7th. While Senator Gaynor is no longer on the Energy Committee, now that he's moved up to the Senate, our new 7th District Rep, Abel, is on the House Energy Committee, which means we still have representation there. And, of course, Senator Short in the 7th is on the Senate Energy Committee, which is also nice to have. So this is the same list I shared with you in December. These are the general policy topic areas we've been watching closely and we expected to see taken up this year. And just as a reminder, as we follow these big picture issues, we have an overarching focus driven by this board and on our PUD leadership to continue to focus on maintaining local decision-making and ensuring a secure grid. So those are sort of the two guiding principles as we approach all of these. In December, I mentioned there was a seemingly growing acknowledgement among lawmakers of some resource adequacy challenges that utilities have been ringing the alarms about for many years, and that does seem to be the case. We've now heard directly from the governor's staff that resource adequacy is his number one policy priority, and we've also seen several bills introduced to address the challenge of resource adequacy. So, yes, I would say that has definitely been a prime focus, and we'll talk about some of those bills in just a bit. On to transmission, that's another increased focus area right now, the idea that we need to build a lot of transmission and we need to build it quickly. There seems to be agreement on that issue. It's just a matter of the best way to accomplish it. We mentioned a December bill language that has now, at this point, been introduced to create the Washington Electrical Transmission Authority. Essentially, it would be a new state function that could own and operate transmission lines, which would be a significant new role. The language in the bill does say that would be a last resort function, that primarily they would be focused on pre-construction work, permitting, and siting. The bill includes some SEPA exemptions for work in existing transmission corridors. And there's both the House and Senate version, and they're both moving, they're both getting hearings, so we continue to engage and monitor those. I'll just note that is just one of two bills we're going to hear about today to create an entirely new energy office within Commerce. So stay tuned for the rest of the story in just a moment on that. On wildfire, we've talked obviously a lot in the past about some ideas that would provide utilities some degree of liability protection from wildfires in exchange for the state approving their mitigation work. The strategy has now sort of shifted, and instead of one big liability protection bill, the IOUs are asking for a few smaller potential fixes. One of them would have the UTC approve IOU mitigation plans. And that's where it kind of ends. There's no then in exchange for that you get XYZ. But I think the hope is that at least that formalization will help them down the road if it came to any sort of fire. And then another bill that we're tracking is an IOU idea to use securitization to recover some of their costs, which I believe it would be a way of passing some of the costs associated with wildfire or other emergencies onto their rates. So we're just, again, these are IOU policies. We're just following along. We'll also maybe see a new bill from the IOUs come out this week or next about vegetation management, which would essentially say if we try to get on your property and do some really critical tree trimming or other work and we're refused, then if it came to it, there would be some protection there for us. Then there's the Schlem PUD idea, which we really like. I know, surprising. It's legislation that would authorize PUDs to participate in a captive insurance entity, which is a form of self-insurance, and it would allow us to purchase reinsurance that is otherwise unavailable to us. And we've crafted a very narrow bill with our legal and risk teams. We've had many conversations with the Office of the Insurance Commissioner, and we have Representative Steele, who has graciously accepted, graciously agreed to introduce it, and we really think we're going to see that in the next few days. And we think this could be a small but helpful tool as we try to secure affordable wildfire insurance, as that's increasingly more difficult. No update today on the low-income assistance bill. You all know we've been following this for some time now. We haven't seen a bill to create a statewide energy assistance program introduced. We expect it to be introduced soon, and we'll continue to share the messaging from Chelan PUD on that, about how essential it is that you all are able to maintain your local decision-making and tailor programs to meet your local needs. You know, we haven't seen a huge transportation electrification effort so far, and I suppose that might be because of the budget situation we find ourselves in. The transportation budget is facing a $1 billion shortfall, and there's conversations about how to raise revenue. There's conversations about a potential road use charge bill, which has not been popular in the past, but we may see some creative thinking around the transportation budget, but so far no big transportation chairman bill as we saw last year. If we do see it, and in the meantime, we continue to just message that, again, we need to be able to be in the room and at the table when decisions about where we locate the EV infrastructure, talk about rates and things like that, that is a utility conversation. Okay. We're going to go very quickly to run through some specific bills, and we're starting off really strong right off the bat with an error. The bill number is not 1390 that we're watching. It is 1329, and this is a bill that Chelan PUD has worked very closely with Public Generating Pool to create. We really like this bill. It's a technical fix to the No Coal provision of the Clean Energy Transformation Act, or CETA, and it would essentially allow Chelan and other utilities like us to continue to engage in our wholesale contracting practices that allow us to hedge some risk, protect customer rates, and it's a bipartisan bill, and we're really optimistic as it moves through the process. It has had one hearing, and it's, I think it's up for a committee vote this week, so we're watching that closely. 1253, this is that bill that came out of conversations with Seattle City Light. It would allow municipal utilities as well as PUDs now to enter into partnerships to develop the energy with a much broader list of partners, public or private. So we like that added flexibility. 1328, okay, this is the next of the two bills I mentioned that would create a new energy function or energy office within Commerce. This one is more about planning, whereas the transmission bill would have the state actually own and build infrastructure. This is would be more of a clearinghouse and would coordinate between agencies and utilities, again, just with the goal of bringing more energy online. There's some conversation, and people have testified at the hearing, questioning the necessity of a whole new energy office to streamline these sort of processes, but it is moving through the legislature, and this is one has been specifically requested by the Department of Commerce, so we are watching it closely. Marco Rubio, drinking my water. Okay, so again, to that point of we need to build more energy projects quickly, attention is turned to FSEC, the process of approving and permitting these projects, and Democrats and Republicans seem to universally agree that that process needs to change. There's just some really different ways of approaching it. The House Majority Leader, Joe Fitzgibbon, has this bill, 1328, that would really streamline the process and put certain projects on a fast track to approval if they meet certain criteria, they provide public benefits, that sort of thing. Meanwhile, Republicans in Eastern Washington are introducing bills to add additional layers of review for wind and solar projects to give the local community more of a voice, because that's been obviously a point of contention the last few years. And one bill would just remove the governor from the FSEC process entirely. So that one has not gotten a hearing. 1409 is a bill we like. It would make some improvements to the state's clean fuel program, of which we are a participant under the program. fuel suppliers need to gradually reduce the carbon intensity of their fuels, and they can, one way they can do that is by purchasing clean energy credits from clean energy suppliers, including electric utilities. But the credit prices have been transacting chronically low prices. It's just not functioning the way it should. So our own Jim White shared his support for this really good bill at a committee hearing last week, and we'll continue to follow this one. 5445, this is that bill that WAPUTA drafted, and they finally were able to introduce it, and it would create the compliance alternative for the Energy Independence Act. That was it 937 back like 15 years ago that passed? And this would allow, instead of having a utility spend money on renewable energy credits, they could spend that money to develop their own projects at home. The head of the state Republican Party, Jim Walsh, has introduced a bill that would allow customers to say no to or opt out of or have their smart meters replaced with analog meters, and all of that would be for no fee, no cost. And he cites just concerns that have come up in his own community about that. That one has not been scheduled. We don't know if that one's going to go anywhere. There are a few ideas about community solar that we're going to see this session. 5515 is the one that's coming from the solar industry. And it would create a new community solar program. IOUs would have to participate. There'd be a lot of requirements around what that would look like. It does not involve COUs, but we're tracking it obviously very closely for potential future implications. The utility industry, along with a bipartisan group of legislators, likes another version of a community solar bill that we'll see probably this week, which would make some changes to our existing community solar program, and we like that one a little bit more. Okay, so as Chelan VOD continues to explore our own energy future, we're keeping an eye on anything having to do with any sources of energy to see what the state is thinking and where they're looking to in the future, what they're supporting. We've heard from some in state leadership that they're trying to be sort of resource neutral, and we're seeing that here. The legislature's joint support behind a number of energy sources. For example, there's a bill to allow fusion projects to come into the state FSEC process. There's a bill to bring thermal energy network companies under the regulation of the UTC. And there's a bill to create an advanced nuclear advisory committee to coordinate across agencies and move those sorts of projects forward. We're going to end by moving away from energy, and we're going to hit on fish, water rights, and wastewater very quickly. 1208 is a good bill. It would make permanent a pilot program that has helped streamline the permitting process for a lot of scientifically vetted salmon habitat restoration projects across the state. This bill would make that project permanent. We're working now on some language that would allow the kind of work that we do under our HCPs to be included on that list of eligible projects. And that's sounding very good. It might move this week, and we'll keep our eye on that. 5261 is a water rights bill. It comes from the new chair of the Energy Committee, Senator Shoemake. She introduced it to try to help a small hydro project in her district, but for some reason it also includes, it deletes a really important provision of the state's water code known as the overriding considerations of public interest provision, which our water rights people tell me is extremely important. So we're working with our teams here and our Olympia folks to make some changes, and she seems open to that. And finally, 5033, it's going to require, if it passes, it would require Ecology to establish some testing requirements for PFAS levels in biosolids, or otherwise known as forever chemicals, and then to report back and, you know, perhaps look down the road to additional requirements around those chemicals in our wastewater. And that's it. That's what I have. Questions? I'll see you again March 17th. And if anyone's coming to the WAPUTA meetings, I will see you there.
Randy? Yeah, going back to way early in your presentation, you mentioned some of the appointments, and one of them being Casey Sixkiller as head of Ecology. And I'm wondering if we've had time to assess What that could mean as it relates to our wild fish and wildlife programs going forward. Any, you know, good things, red flags, you know, have we had any conversations along those lines yet?
I haven't met with him. I tend to think that former congressional staffers take a pretty pragmatic view of these issues, so that's heartening to me. I don't know, Suzanne, if you've worked with him in the past.
Yeah, I've worked with him in D.C., so
yes.
Decent guy, so.
Yes.
Anybody else? Well, as usual, ton of bills. We're facing a huge deficit. We're going to see a huge wave of those drop off later on this month. Is it later on this month? Is that?
Yes.
21st is yes. The cutoff. But the importance of all of this is that many of these bills cycle and come up year after year and get refined and negotiated, and so it's an ongoing process. So thank you for the update, and we'll keep working.
Yeah, they won't be technically dead, and they just probably won't move this year. They'll still technically be alive even next year if they don't make it this year. So.
Right. Thank you. Good point. All right, Kirk, let's move on to number five.
Okay. Justin Erickson and Sarah Delogio reporting on the customer experience and facilities update associated with the service center. You might recall we had a discussion. This was one of the action items from a prior board meeting to come back and talk about how we're evaluating customer experience in this facility and whether it's meeting the intended outcomes. And so Justin and Sarah are going to give us an update, and there'll be more to come later on.
Okay. Thanks, Kirk. Good morning, Commissioners. Sarah and I are really excited to present to you this morning and update you on what we've seen now that we've been open a little over a year now here at the Service Center. So our purpose today is to provide that one-year update. As part of that, I think it's important to kind of anchor back and look back at how some decisions were made and what we were hoping to achieve here. So we'll talk about the facility selection process and customer experience planning, which was detailed and in-depth, and a little bit about the ultimate decision to build this facility. We'll provide an update on visitor use and how the facility is performing relative to expectations. There's some recent and very recent enhancements and some coming very soon that we'd like to also mention, and then be happy to close out with any questions or discussion that the board has. As Kirk mentioned, there were two items on your parking lot that as part of the genesis for this presentation, it included information on the number of visitors to the service center, along with how it's meeting expectations. And then there was also a question about a way to collect data to help us assess whether the service center is meeting those goals. And so we'll address that comprehensively today. All right, so looking back, discussions about at least the latest wave of discussions that ultimately led to this facility about district facilities and needs date back to the 2015 timeframe, and a number of processes that were kicked off to evaluate the state of facilities and to explore options and opportunities. Ultimately, those options boiled down to a handful of items, including status quo, keeping things the way they were at Fifth Street and at Holly Street and other district sites. Redeveloping those facilities in place was another option. Splitting campuses and being permanently split forever, essentially, also an option to look at a 10-year split where the campuses would remain, or the sites would remain as is for a period of time, and then eventually, and so that was, you could sort of think of that as like a deferral option. And then the last option that was seriously considered was a consolidated campus, which is ultimately where the board landed and where we're at today. And you were guided in that decision by the balancing of six goals that were identified during that process. And it was customer benefit, financial value, productivity, safety, cost predictability, and then an adherence to generally accepted office and facility standards. And so the careful balancing of those goals, and they're self-reinforcing, as you might imagine. If the workforce is more productive, they're providing more value to customer owners, there's more benefit. Likewise, if it's a safe environment, people feel comfortable to, and are able to be more productive in the first place. And so you can think of these as just a basket of goals, all of which are important singularly, but also how they interplay and work together. Ultimately, a decision was made, and it was to consolidate operations and build a service center at this location because it best met those evaluation criteria that I just highlighted. So not only was it the best long-term financial value, but it offered the best opportunity to standardize office space and work environments. It was also determined to be the best place to service the community geographically, obviously with the intersection of a variety of highway and road networks. And it was also a one-stop shop for customer service that was convenient. And we had enhanced safety for employees, customer owners, and visitors at PUD facilities. And so this property was purchased in 2018. Design commenced in 2019, or design process commenced shortly thereafter and went through 2019. And construction started in 2020. We have about three times the amount of acreage on this site as we did on Fifth Street. So getting more specifically to customer experience. Customer experience was foundational in this process. And so public open houses and meetings were held in 2019 as design was progressing. The whole evaluation process starting back in 2015 also included a lot of emphasis and focus on the customer experience. There was a number of key design features that were identified. Sarah will talk about some of those more specifically in just a moment. And we received hundreds of comments from the public about opportunities to design this in a way that best met their needs, as well as for employees. And this work was also guided by work groups that were formed, internal and then external, as well as community members. And Sarah was a key participant of the work groups, and her work was and remains essential to ensuring that we best meet customer owner needs. So at this point in the presentation, I'm going to turn it over to her.
Good morning, Commissioner. Sarah Deloger, Customer Service and Dispatch Supervisor. So thanks, Justin. I had to go back and think about how many committees I was a part of during the building process, and I know at least a four, but there may have been more. So thinking back, I'm going to ask you all to think back for a moment. So let your mind wander and think back to where we were in our old facility. So as a customer, if I were looking to build a piece of property, I would need to go to our service building to apply. When I found out how much it would cost, I would need to go to our main building to pay. And then to pick up materials, I would need to go out to Holly Street to be prepared to have electricity ran to my property. Now, along the way, I would also probably notice that our building didn't have any spaces or much space at all for customers to sit and chat with staff. I would also maybe notice a dark and maybe not so welcoming atmosphere. And perhaps I might notice a smell, the older building smell. There were some areas that had quite an odor to it. But today, we have moved forward into a new building. The windows let lots of light in. We have an area that's ready to help our customers. We have an information desk that helps get the right person to our staff at the right time. We have access to restrooms, meeting rooms, the boardroom on boardroom day. We have lots of different displays and other technologies that we didn't have in the past. We are truly ready to help our customers today in a way that meets their needs. So just speaking to some of those things, you can see here in the image, this is our first floor lobby. We know we greet or assist most customers with bill pay, so obviously that was a great spot to have them on the first floor ready to help our customers. We also have our ambassador that is our first point of contact for customers who has done a spectacular job welcoming them in. Again, making sure we get the customer to the right person at the right time. Something that we didn't have in the past, or maybe we did and people just didn't realize it, was Gerald's Place. So now that restaurant is front and foremost for not only our employees, but also for our customers, neighboring businesses, and visitors, serving them yummy food when they're hungry and need it the most. That second floor customer lobby experience that used to be the service building is now in our second floor just across from this room. With that streamlined approach for that one-stop shop for all customers where they can not only work with our construction staff to determine needs and costs and work with our first floor staff to make payments and such. So, you know, really thinking back to that concept for supporting our customers with that one-stop location. We also now have our boardroom. So you all may have spent a little bit of time in our boardroom in our old headquarters. Now this boardroom is much more accessible to visitors and customers alike, creating an inviting space for them to provide their public comment or to learn about our utility from our processes and such. So you might wonder how many visitors have used this current space. So not surprising, our primary use, as I mentioned before, is for billing needs. As this image shows, about 7,000 customers, which is about 580 customers per month. We do know customer trends have been changing since COVID, so things slowed way down with in-person visits during COVID, obviously, and now today we're seeing that pick back up a smidge, or quite a bit. They also come to greet us in person for parks passes or meet with specific employees or work, you know, to apply for a position with human resources. There's so many things that are happening in just this one space. We also want to assist our community and look for ways to meet with them. So we've hosted Fiestas Mexicanas celebration after hours in our facilities. We've done trick-or-treating, and certainly our open house in 2023 brought in a lot of our customers to really experience our new facility. Well, I've talked about a lot of successes. You've heard about the cafe, the information desk, how the environment changed with lots of lighting and ample space for customers to meet and discuss things, that one-stop shop approach as well. What I haven't talked about is some of the improvements that we're looking towards doing. So one thing that's been on the agenda to do is creating the trail access. That's currently underway. Adding public art like we had down at our older campus downtown. Visitor wayfinding. This is actually one that we've recently completed. So the signage out at the intersecting road out in front of the building used to be dark, and it really blended in with the building itself. So as we get customer feedback, we look to see what we can do to better their experience. The sign's now white, which helps provide that contrast in coloring. We also heard quite a bit of concern and recognize it ourselves with parking, so we've expanded our parking spaces to better accommodate our customers. And we're currently working on looking at some opportunities for our payment drop box, as we know our customers have had some challenges utilizing that. So a few other updates just to mention. I already talked about the parking spaces, so 8 more came along to assist them. We're also working towards installing 14 EV chargers this quarter, both available for public and employee use. We recently just merged our Gerald's Cafe, updated our Gerald's Cafe timeline. So beginning today, this week, correct?
Correct.
This week, their hours are the same Monday through Friday. So they're open that lunchtime time frame on Fridays, which they weren't in the past. We've also stood up a lobby governance committee to really look at enhancements and ensure that we're aligning on signage or decorations or what have you in the lobby. So really trying to evaluate opportunities to assist our customers better. I did hear previously that there was an interest in having some music in our lobby, so we've actually have a pilot on that, so you may step out and hear some soft music in the lobby, trying to create that ambiance.
you so much, Sarah. I'm going to close this out now by talking through some additional opportunities for improvements as we always look for ways for continuing enhancements. We are exploring feedback mechanisms that are more immediate when it comes to our visitors. As Sarah shared, we've had thousands of visitors. And right now we don't have a good way to get instant feedback like you might get sometimes when you frequent, a business where you might complete a transaction and then you're immediately prompted or shortly thereafter prompted for a survey. And so, of course, we do have our customer owner survey that we do every other year, but I do think that there is an opportunity for us to think about feedback mechanisms that are more immediate so that we can continue to make improvements. As we build out our technical abilities, we are also anticipating additional analytics that we could glean from operations data, information about truck rolls, response times, things like that. In part, we have some of that data, in part we don't, and even where we do, there's ways to analyze that more effectively that we're exploring. Also recognize that facilities, these are amazing facilities, but we also need to ensure, just like the board adopted a 50-year vision, we need to think through how facilities can grow and shift and expand. And so we do have ability, say, for example, here at Building A at the Service Center to grow and to shift space to accommodate additional growth. But there are some limitations to that, or there could be over time. And so it's never too early to start thinking long term. Couple of final items. Thinking through formal development of performance indicators that could be regularly tracked and reported. It could be some of the things I've already mentioned, but probably others. And then we're continuing to evaluate how best to implement the landscaping and the overall design aesthetic outside. So, as Sarah mentioned, we have opportunities to incorporate public art. Some of the landscaping that's there, we've had mixed reviews on, and we're also curious to see how it does with traffic and durability and getting through another winter. And so opportunities there to just make sure that the site continues to shine and be something that we're all proud of. And as we open it up for questions, I just wanted to recognize that there's so many people that were involved in this process and continue to be involved in this process today. So Sarah and I are blessed to be with you today, but by no means does that negate all the people that have been involved. And if we start to list all those people, then we will inevitably forget people. So we're not going to list specific names, but as we've talked about, it's everyone from customer service, customer engineering, facilities, project delivery, and engineering that delivered this facility, the ambassadors that we have in the lobby, and Gerald's team, our security group, our parks team, just literally everybody here on this campus is involved in some way in customer service. So we hope this facility is serving the needs of the community well. We look forward to continued enhancement. Be happy to answer any questions you have.
Really appreciate the update. It's good to actually look at the data, current data, and then also to look back and remember where we were at and where we've come. And commissioners, do you have any comments or questions? Carnan?
So far, so good, right? And I think you've done a great job in obtaining these goals. And as we look forward to enhancing the employee experience, as my tours around the district, one of the things that keeps coming up, and I we go back to the lineman experience, and one of the things that is very important to our line crew is their equipment and how they maintain that equipment in, you know, first class operation. And one of the issues here is in our building here where we store our equipment, there's the wind blows through there. It's a kind of open to the environment as far as snow, leaves, wind, whatever. And in thinking of our employee experience, it would be nice to have some doors or something put on there and maybe brought that to a priority. priority. I think it's nice to have the vehicle charging and all the things that you've talked about and the amenities and making the customer experience better. I think maybe there's some things we could do as well to make our employee experience a little better. So it's just a matter of priority. As I go to Chelan and I talk to the line crews up there, and in the whole tour of our district, everything is just excellent. All the employees have nice facilities. The equipment is there. Everything is there. But one thing you do when you do go up to Chelan and you visit with the guys up there, there's a need to improve those facilities as well so that they're at the same level as the rest. Again, employee experience, I think, it should be high on our priority list, along with customer service. That's all very, very important, but we shouldn't forget the guys that are actually out there, you know, the foot soldiers of this utility, and they're the face of this utility out in the community, and their morale is always very important. If we have high morale with those folks, then they express that when they're out there, and they show that. So anyway, I'm not saying the morale is bad. Morale is very good, but I think, in my view, a little more attention to that area would be very good.
Thank you for your comments, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carnett. Any others? Gary? No.
Thank you for your comments, and I loved your presentation. And thanks for the walk back, too, in terms of helping us to remember exactly the thought process that was taken by the board and by staff in general to get to where we are today. There's no doubt that you just have more efficiency when you have everyone together. You also have the ability, and I've heard this numerous times, as just walking through the halls and talking with folks about that cross-pollination. Somebody is nearby your cubicle, or maybe you sit with them now at lunch, where in the past, because we were so broken up, didn't have that opportunity. So we're seeing innovation come out of this. Lots of things that are far exceeding the brick and the mortar that we have here. And so thank you for making this a reality. And when I say that, I'm speaking to all staff, because it took everyone here at this organization to make this happen. But there's something that we can't forget. And what we can't forget is our old service center, our old headquarters building, and the good that is being done there for the community, that now the YMCA has a new home. Their building's not quite built yet, but it will be, and the dreams of what they have will serve many, many families and children in our community. And we have the Riverhouse Players that now are able to expand their facility and provide more theatrical productions for the community. So it far exceeds everything. We have a chain reaction going on here, that this building is a wonderful building, but the legacy that is now leaving for the downtown core can't be forgotten either. So great job, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. And we'll have an update on Fifth Street at your next meeting. So looking forward to providing that.
You know, part of that walk backwards in history was to think about our visits to, and appreciate Commissioner Bergeron's comments, that if you think about the Quonsonettes and old buildings at our hydro facilities and what's there now that most of the public hasn't been able to see because it's at the projects, there's some incredible facility work that has gone on at those two projects that enhance the work and lives of our employees out there and the safety. And so just to reflect backwards where we've come over the past few years is pretty remarkable. In fact, not pretty remarkable, extremely remarkable. And so I appreciate your response to our request and good update. And anything else, Commissioners? Yeah.
Thank you. Steve, you said something that made me remember one more thing, and it has to do with smell. That for those that might be listening, that there was a facility on our campus at the old Fifth Street. That was an old brick building, and it served many masters over the years. It was over 100 years old, wasn't it, Kirk?
I don't know how old it was. I think
it was so old. How old was it? It's so old that during part of its lifetime, they used straw as insulation in the walls, and that there were places where that straw was just not accessible to remove, and that really lent itself to just a pungent odor that employees had to endure. So as long as we're walking back in time and walking back in history, that building, I understand, will not exist going forward. But it just tells you how far we have come. So, Steve, thank you for your comments. Karnan, thank you for your comments as well.
At this time, do we have any public that have any comments to about our facilities in this presentation? Come on up to the microphone. Share your name and where you live. And
My name is Dean O'Daffer, and I live in Wenatchee, Washington. And this is the first time that I have visited. I didn't make it to the opening visitation, and I'm really impressed. I really am. It's a great entrance.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Dean. All right. Thank you for the presentation and the update. At this point, I will open it up to any comment from the public on anything that you'd like to address the commissioners on.
Looks like I own this microphone.
There you go, Dean.
My name is Dean O'Daffer, and I live in Wenatchee, Washington. I came here to talk to you about solar power, like we saw in the legislature. Everybody's thinking about it. And maybe a little about natural gas power. So just because solar is an intermittent power source does not mean that it should be ignored. Solar has two relevant stories to tell. The first story is of residential roof solar, which is the most expensive type of solar. But it still should be included in the Chelan PUD power arsenal. It should be treated in the same manner that as energy conservation is treated. A rebate is given to the customer to encourage them to pay for the installation, and the customer then recoups their investment with lower monthly energy bills, and the PUD can sell the saved power at a higher price and also profit from this arrangement. The second view of solar is to look at it as a new source of electricity for the grid. The overall lifetime cost of community/industrial solar farming is cheaper than coal, wind, and nuclear. Only natural gas is slightly cheaper. But solar is clean energy, and natural gas is dirty energy. I believe that it's imperative that the Chelan PUD establish both residential and community/industrial solar projects. One of the PUD 9 value goals is to invest in clean energy sources for future community needs. And as you well know, time waits for no one. Natural gas should not be invited in until it has the technology and the will to be cleaned up. Then it can be added to the power mix as a backup to solar and wind when that power is unavailable. Thank you for your time. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Thanks for the recognition of our long-range visioning plan, too, Dean. Thank you. All right. Any other additional public comment? Okay, we will move into our business session, Kirk, with our consent agenda. Commissioners, do I have a motion for our consent agenda?
I would make such a motion.
Second.
All those in favor of the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, Kirk, we're on to our regular agenda item number 9.
Yeah, agenda item number 9 is a resolution authorizing amendment number 3 to service agreement 22-12417 with Clear Result Consulting to continue providing services related to the High Energy Burden Program. With us is Josh Mitchell. Welcome, Josh.
Thanks. Good morning, Commissioners.
Hi, Josh.
Josh Mitchell. I'm the Residential Energy Advisor for Chelan Beauty. Part of my job is to manage our low-income programs as well. So a little bit of background. This program, we call it Comfort Plus. It's managed by Clear Result, a third-party implementer. But the origins of this came all the way back in 2018 when the board at the time asked us to ensure that we were not, any rate increases were not going to impact our most vulnerable customers in the district. And that also coincided with right around the same time the Clean Energy Transformation Act, or CETA, came about. And part of that law was that we were to develop programs that reduce the energy burden for customers whose bills are 6% or more of their annual income. So this is good news, to ask for more money on a contract where we get to impact in such a positive way the lives of our low-income customers. We have developed a successful program where we're targeting neighborhoods who have homeowners who have high energy burdens. We're working with local contractors to improve the efficiency of their homes and make their homes much more comfortable. In fact, in December, I got an email on a Monday after we had installed a heat pump and did some insulation and repaired a window in a home where the customer said, this is a single mother who said this is the first time her children had slept comfortably in the winter in years.
Wow.
We served 23 homes last year with the Comfort Plus program, and with the extension of these funds, we hope we can do another 25 or so over the next 12 months. Are there any questions I can address?
Question? Out of the 23 homes, were there some homes that, or some residents that you were not able to offer any assistance, or is this just the total amount that needed it? You understand what I'm questioning?
There were homes that were beyond repair that we were unable to do anything with.
Okay, so you're saying the need is greater than the 23 that we serviced? Or?
Yes. But we also have a program that we can only ramp up so fast.
I understand. I'm trying to understand what the need is out there, and are we meeting that need with the program that's in place today?
There's always more need for our most vulnerable customers, and if you guys, with your support, I would be happy to come back to ramp up the program.
But I'm just trying to answer. When you have a program like this, you probably have a target that you're trying to meet. And I'm not sure what that target is. Is it just helping so many people, or is there a monetary target that you're trying to achieve in their subsidy? So I'm trying to understand that program. And if the need is greater than what we're able to service based on our targets and what our goals are, I guess, for it. I don't quite understand what the target is and the level of the support.
Commerce has reported there are about 1,200 high energy burden homes in the county. And so we're working to reduce that number over the next 10, 12, 20. CETA requires us to meet to reduce that load or reduce that number by 60% by 2030 and 90% by 2050. So we're just incrementally working through that with the resources that we have.
I'm wondering if it might be possible to have more information just coming back like in a presentation in our learning at a future meeting where we get to hear a little bit more in depth on the program.
Yeah, I'll speak for Josh here in that there is certainly a desire to ramp up this program. And one of the things we wanted to do was, before we did that, make sure we have a program that's sustainable. And so what he's suggesting here is an extension to continue what we're currently doing and then look at options for ramping it up in the future. So it would make sense that we come back with more information.
Anything else? Gary?
Josh, thank you. Appreciate your presentation. I also appreciate what you're doing. But just my question is, do you find that for those individuals who are renting a house, does that create an obstacle in and of itself for us to be able to provide some of the additional weatherproofing and support for low-income power?
This program has been designed for homeowners. Currently, I did write a grant with the Department of Commerce, and some of these funds are helping for those renters as well. So three of the homes that we worked with were paid through a Department of Commerce grant, and we hope to continue more work with Commerce to help with renters as well.
Great. Thank you.
Anything else? Josh, thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
Ready for agenda item number 10?
Number 10.
I'll invite Salim Kazi up. This is a resolution ratifying change orders number 3, 4, and 5, and further approving change order number 6 for the jump off ridge switchyard and transmission line construction with Michaels Pacific Energy Incorporated of Tumwater, Washington. Welcome, Salim.
Good morning. So this resolution is in reference, like Kurt mentioned, jump off ridge switchyard, which is currently under construction right now. This is for the Microsoft large load interconnection project. So this resolution is to ratify change order number 3, 4, and 5, and also requesting approval for change order number 6. Under this resolution. Briefly, change order number 3 was executed to extend the milestone date, completion date for the mechanical completion of the project that was for phase 1, 2, and 3, but it was still aligned with the Microsoft schedule, so it didn't affect that. Change order number 3 and 4 were executed for some additional work that wasn't anticipated in the original contract. So we executed that. That was combined amount for that was about $493,000 approximately. Some of the key items under that was we had a breaker stands, access stands. We have to install some grounding work that needed to be done on the transformers. And there were some modifications that requested by our crews in the fencing. We provided more access, so that was there. In Appendix A of the resolution, there are minor, several other small items included in there, but just for the time, if you want any questions, I can answer those. So this request for this change order number 6, under this resolution basically consists of 4 items. The total amount I'm requesting is $1,085,000. the main item in this, in these one of these four items, is the modification of the duct banks in the joint access zone in the switch yard. The joint access zone is a common zone that we call, which is accessible by the district and the Microsoft. This is where we supply them, we call that duct banks for conduits, which supply the feeder power to the data center. So these were installed based on the design developed by our consultant in 2023. And we also provided the design to Microsoft for the information. So we went ahead and built these. However, recently Microsoft contacted our, now they're wrapping up their construction. They went through their design process. But they have requested us to modify those duct banks, the one that we have already installed. So based, and they're requesting us to change it. So there are four main changes that they're asking. So duct banks are basically runoff conduits that run underground between from switch yard towards to their yard. So main thing was the routing where we came out from our switch yard did not meet their design. So they, for some reason, they decided that best for them that to be at a different location. So they're requesting us to reroute those conduit banks. These are not very long runs. They're just out of our yard to them is still 60 to 80 feet long by the time. But ours is already installed. We already have rocks installed, compacted, so there's some rework has to be done. But they want us to reroute it so we can align it to their, where they are bringing their conduits, number one. Number two is the number of conduits they're requesting. They just want four with a specific space requirement. We installed six before, but they said they need only four with specific space requirements. Thirdly was they want these duct banks to be encased in a thermal concrete backfill in the trenches, not just in dirt. They wanted it because of the heat dissipation requirements. They want that, this portion of the duct banks that going into their yard from our yard, they want it to be in a thermal backfill, concrete backfill. And lastly was they wanted some of that backfill to be reinforced by a rebar, which goes under some roadway that may have some traffic. So we want to do that. So these are the main changes, and the cost for just this portion is about $985,000. Of the total I'm requesting was $1,080,000. So
is it, this ultimately is going to be paid by Microsoft?
Yes. Yeah. That was my next question. Yeah. Yeah. So this is all being paid. Microsoft will pay that. We set aside some contingency funds later on for these eventualities that to cover that. So we still have a good amount of money in that contingency fund to cover that. We're almost getting very close to, by the end of this year, third quarter, we should be finishing up all the construction on that one. So, so yes, Microsoft will pay for that. One thing I do want to mention, so that was the request for this. Now, the other three items are a little bit minor in nature. They are in the Appendix A. If you have any questions on that, I can go into that. But this is the majority of the one. One thing we did in our discussions with them, and we are reviewing their design on these conduit banks, one thing came out that I do want to mention that I may have to come back for that. Both sides have their grounding grid system. Substation has it, and they have a grounding grid. By code, in our design, we indicated that both grids needs to be at least minimum 18 feet away from each other, so that we cannot impact each grid. But when Microsoft conduits have been within 8 feet to our grid, that during these discussions, it was pointed out that, oh, so that was a red flag for us. So we asked our consulting firm to run a model. So several solutions were discussed. The best or feasible solution is to combine both the grids, make one big grid. But for that, we have to do some modeling and a study. And in order to, so by the end of February, we'll get that study done. We suspect we have to put basically one or two ground wells in our substation. Ground well is just drill a deep hole, put a copper rod all the way down where you can some moisture, so it can help with any fault that comes up. It will go there. So we don't want to impact Microsoft or here. So for phase one, I don't think so. We need one, but we have seven transformers. So we think when we bring the two more transformers, we will need that. So we're finishing up. We will finish the modeling on this thing, so we'll know for sure whether we need one or two ground wells. I may be coming back for that. Just want to let you guys know. That came out of these discussions. That's all I have. Any questions?
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's move on to 11.
I'll invite Casey Hall up. Agenda item 11 is a resolution requesting request for qualifications for Rock Island and Rocky Reach hydroelectric dam civil and mechanical improvements and authorizing the general manager of the district to publish notice inviting sealed proposals for said project using the alternative progressive design build procedure authorized by RCW 3910. Welcome, Casey.
Thanks, Kirk. Morning, commissioners. Casey Hall, project manager. So as Kirk had indicated, I'm requesting authorization to advertise for progressive design build services for our Rock Island and Rocky Reach spillway modernization programs. So if you remember back in, I think it was August, that Sam Dilley, counterpart project manager out at Rock Island, came before the commission and requested authorization to go to the state, Capital Projects Advisory Review Board, CPARB, for approval to use a progressive design build methodology on these programs. So we were approved. We were approved in October, and since that time period, we've been working internally to finalize or mature elements of those programs and then also develop solicitation documents. So if approved today, we would go out for solicitation towards the end of this month with a RFQ and draft RFP, and then the solicitation would roll out in a couple phases. So the first would be, as I indicated, we would go out with an RFQ, which is a request for qualifications. Prospective teams would submit their proposals, and they would be focused around the team's experience and projects of similar scope to determine if they're the right fit for our projects. So we would shortlist probably 3 to 4 of those firms that with their submittal. We'd score them, shortlist 3 or 4. We'd move them forward, provide them the final RFP document, request for proposal, which really drills down into the more details of the program, how they'd manage the project or the program, how they'd manage scope, how they'd work with the district, their technical approach to the program. We would score their proposals. We'd actually bring them in for interviews as well and ask them specific details about how their approach. And then they would provide us a fee for their to manage the program. We would then score that. The team internally would score that, and then we would select a team to move forward with. Third phase would be contracting with that team for pre-construction services, which we would come before the board and commission again for approval for that, entering into a contract with them. But that phase of the work would really develop that program approach for a holistic approach to the Rock Island and Rocky Reach spillways, looking at how we can reduce our risks holistically at those facilities with these projects. And once we have those elements developed through that process, we bring those back to the commission with amendments to the contract and GMPs to add that scope to their contract to actually design and construct those elements. Budgeting for that, we would work through with the Progressive Design Builder as well. You know, part of it will be developing an overall program schedule and cost, and those individual elements of the program would be would go through our normal budgeting process over the next few years. So that's really what we're planning on doing for the next few months. I would hope to be back in September, October with a negotiated contract for the commission to approve. Is there any questions?
Yeah. You know, something tells me this is a really big deal. That smile told me that I hit home. How far and wide will we be? I mean, I've got to believe the number of people that have the capability of doing what you're talking about are spread to the wind throughout the world. You said you'll narrow it to 3 or 4. Do we have confidence we've got a good group to select from?
Yes. I've, you know, since we're not out to advertisement, I've had some initial conversations with probably 7 different firms right now that are interested in partnering with a design and a construction team to go after these programs.
Yes.
So there's a lot of interest out there right now.
That's great. This is a big deal, though.
Yeah, and finding the right team to help partner with us to find the right approach that reduces our risks at those spillways. Working through that process with the right team is going to be very important so that we're doing the right thing.
Any other questions for Casey? Thank you, Casey.
Thank you.
All right, Kirk, let's move to 12.
Picked in by Chris McDermott up. This is agenda item 12, a resolution authorizing continued reliability coordinator and supplemental services under service agreement SA-24-13513 with California Independent System Operator Corporation. Welcome, Chris.
Good morning, and I'm Chris McDermott, System Operations. So I thought it might be worthwhile to go back and say, why do we have RC services? And that stems from the 2 blackouts in the summer of 1996 for the Western Interconnection, where a couple million people were put out of power in those events. And NERC investigated that and decided that the best way to do that is to have an overarching entity that is watching the larger grid rather than just the TOP and BA areas. And so they mandated. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Can you, for our listening audience, can you say what RC services?
Yeah, reliability coordinator services, and they were actually called security coordinator services when they first started, and there were 4 regional ones at that time, and balancing authority areas and transmission operator areas were required to take those services, and those services were paid through our WEC dues. At the time, it was WSCC dues, and then when WSCC became WEC in 2002, the 4 regional security coordinators were all consolidated into a single reliability coordinator, and that's when we started calling them a reliability coordinator. In 2014, they bifurcated, and Peak Reliability was spun off from WEC, and so that was when we first started doing a separate contract from our WEC dues, and so we started a contract for those RC services at that time. As Peak wound down, this board passed a resolution in 2018 to take RC services from the California ISO. And so we've been operating under that since 2018. And so today, this is merely a request to add additional funds. We have reached the end of the approved funding in that original contract with the California ISO. This is not related to all the discussions we've had with the market or any of those types of things. This is separate from that. This is just our RC services. And I say just, but it's really a critical service that, again, is mandated by NERC. And so this doesn't modify any contracts. This doesn't increase a commitment or change anything that's existing today. This is simply extending the funding.
Any questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, have resolutions 9, 10, 11, and 12 in front of us. Do I have a motion?
I would move approval of resolutions 9 through 12.
Second.
Any discussion on those, any of those? Hearing none, all those in favor of resolutions 9, 10, 11, and 12 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motions, resolutions pass. Okay, Kirk, let's move on into manager items.
Okay, I just have one, and that was just to remind you all that you should have received the quarterly project and contract reports in your email board packet. Yep, that's it.
All right.
Let me know if you have any questions.
Perfect. Lisa, let's talk about commissioner schedules and travel and meetings and all that good stuff.
Yes. Okay. So, next week is Waputa meetings in Olympia. I have Commissioners Bergeron, McKenna, and Smith attending. Is that still in your plans? Yes.
Yes, and I just have one change. Tuesday and Wednesday, but not Thursday for me.
Okay.
For a motel.
Okay. Thank you. Then after that, we have the legislative rally in Washington, D.C. for Commissioner Allen, McKenna, and Smith. I have put packets in your offices, so if you could please check them carefully and let me know if any changes need to be made.
Thanks for doing that.
Of course. We have March Waputa meetings. I have rooms held for everyone except Commissioner Arsenault, who is participating only by Zoom. March 27th, I have Commissioner Allen attending Waputa quarterly water meeting. Commissioner Arsenault is not. Anyone else?
No, I'm attending.
Okay.
And I'll be attending by Zoom.
Okay. Commissioner Smith, no. Commissioner McKenna?
No.
Then we have April Waputa in Vancouver. I don't know how to say the casino name, but you all have a room. And then Waputa in May.
NWPPA. Isn't it NWPPA in May?
Well, I have a strategic planning meeting first.
He's excited to
I'm getting there.
Okay. I didn't think Waputa had anything in May. So
there's a strategic planning meeting in May that I guess we're going to talk about later.
Okay. I don't remember.
Committee chairs are part of the
chairs. Committee chairs. Probably on that list.
Yeah, you can probably take me off that. I'll do a Zoom.
And
I will be attending that.
You will. Okay. And NWPPA.
Yeah.
Finally, is May 19 to 22, and you all have a room. So let me know if you don't plan to attend. But if you do, let me know. We can get airfare going, and registration wasn't open yet. And June 6 to 11, APPA rooms were not yet available. I checked. And I have everyone attending that except Commissioner McKenna.
Correct.
Okay.
It's probably far enough.
You're going to let your grandkid treat you that way.
That's what we do for our grandkids. They make the rules.
Can't wait.
You don't mind getting bussed around by them.
Thank you, Lisa. Any questions or comments for Lisa? Anything else? Thanks, Lisa. All right. So, commission items, we have some meetings that we need to make some motions on. Would anybody like to? We have a couple changes in meetings and locations. Would anybody like to?
I move to make the following board meeting changes. Change the location of the April 21, 2025 meeting to the Chelan PUD Leavenworth Auditorium located at 222 Chumstick Highway, Leavenworth, and change the location of the May 5, 2025 meeting to the PUD Service Center located at 203 Old Station Road, Wenatchee.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Those are approved. Commissioners, do we have anything from you?
I just wanted to commend the city of Chelan on their state of the city and also to recognize our team for changing dates. The mayor and team for the city of Chelan was very appreciative of having us there and also not having a conflict. So I think that was a very wise decision. And I was grateful to see Justin and also fellow Commissioner Bergeron there. So it was well attended by the community, and this the mayor has a lot going on, so it's fun to see.
Great. Thank you for the update. And we have an upcoming one in Wenatchee. I don't remember the date, but another meeting, Justin.
March 5th.
Yeah, this is not, it's commissioner item because I got the microphone, I guess. But in another part of my life, I'm on the North Central Washington Community Foundation Board. And as a part of that role, this past year, the Community Foundation created local advisory committees to help in their processing and review of applications for monies that come from the foundation. And they're currently in the period, as we speak, of soliciting individuals from the community who wish to be part of the local advisory committees. There's a deadline of March 1, and I know that probably a lot of you get that mailing from the Community Foundation. There's been one that just went out this past week, but I just wanted to highlight for you that last year was the first year that these community advisory boards were in place, and there's one in Leavenworth, there's one in Cashmere, there's one in Wenatchee, and it goes on up to the Okanagan Valley. But the feedback that we got from people participating in those local advisory boards was powerful. It was good. There's a lot of good things going on in our community, and it's multi-county, Chelan, Douglas, and Okanagan County. But if you're so inclined to take a look at that application, when it, you know, and it has come out, and I'm sure that Libby has seen it, right? Yes. And so, consider it. I know there are some of our current and past employees that have been part of local advisory boards. So, give it a look.
Any other commissioners? Carmen?
Well, I just want to weigh in here and also applaud the city of Chelan for their State of the City program that they had. Again, Kelly, it was those meetings, these local meetings are really well attended. And it shows that the community is tuned in to what's going on. And it was very much appreciated, at least with the people I was sharing it with, that the PUD was there, the port was there, sheriff was there, all the entities showing an interest in their community. So, I mean, it really, tell Aaron, it's a great job, and enjoyed it. The other thing, I just notified, I accepted a position. I don't know what I'm getting into, but it's the Water Sewer PUD Work Group, which is an advisory group that sets policy for growth management and takes advice from experts within the field, and then they will be giving, there's a series of meetings throughout this year, and then they'll apparently will give a recommendation to the Department of Commerce that will forward that on to the state legislature in their review of the Growth Management Act. So we'll see what that is. Never done this before, but you know, I'm going to give it a whirl. So just to let you know.
Good for you.
Thank you.
All right. Carlo, I don't know if this is the first official meeting that you've been here since you've moved over, but again, welcome to your to Wenatchee and your new move and your new job, and your family's here, and your daughter and your wife, and so welcome to Chelan PUD, and again, and that's probably been done, but I just want to again reinforce that, so we're glad you're here. Okay, Kirk, follow up on delegation of action items from prior board meetings and today.
We've got a few to follow up on just from prior meetings. We had a number of them that were related to the service center. I'll just go through them just to refresh our memory. Justin was going to provide the update on the music testing, which he provided for the lobby as part of the service center update. We're also going to provide information on the number of visitors to the service center that was included in today's presentation. John and John Stoll and Justin, we're going to develop a way to collect data, which we're embarking on how to assess whether the service center is meeting what was intended. And then I had one to follow up with you all on getting feedback on the fiber program or broadband program, which we spent some time at the workshop on Friday. So those are the ones from the prior meetings. We had captured one new one today. And, it was to provide more information on the Comfort Plus program for the high energy burden customers. So we will come back with that.
Great. Thank you for that review. At this time, I'll open it up for any other additional public comment.
I did have after, if there is any public comment, we had one more item to update you on.
No public comment? Okay. I have one more item. I just sent a message to Kirk hot off the press. I heard from our billing group that as we were talking about frost protection rates earlier or late this fall, as of today, those billing credits for their monthly charges in the off season, the last few months, have been applied as a credit in their bill this month, and the bills have been updated to the new billing structure.
I say this with a smile on my face. It will make Senator Gaynor very happy.
I thought it might.
Great. Thanks for the update.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any other matters of general business as may necessarily come before the commission today? Hearing none, we will be moving, we'll be going into recess, and then meeting at 1 o'clock to go into executive session for 60 minutes. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. We're
90. Excuse me. Now, Commissioner, need to read the reason for the executive session.
I apologize. Thank you for that.
Sorry, my mic was off.
We'll be recessing and then moving in at 1 o'clock for executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigations to which the district or its board is likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by statute for 60 minutes. Thank you. We are in recess.